We've had, I've seen rain here for the first time in 3 weeks, so you know it's a bit confusing.
Alex, ever seen
that
rain in your life?
It's been pissing down here actually.
where's the Aussie twang, mate? I thought there'd be an Aussie twang there.
It depends. I can say righto every now and again. I call people old mate and stuff like that. You know, give it a red hot crack.
I'd like to know why Jonesy still has the best hairdo of all of us and has no grey hair at all.
Yeah, suspicious if you ask me.
I can't see. I just thought, I don't want to put glasses on and look like I'm getting really old. And then just joined in. Charlie's pretending he can see. And we're all leaning into going, yeah, we're like, we're getting on now, right?
I've literally been up long enough to make a coffee and put my contact lenses in. And now I don't know why I bothered, but yeah.
Well, I'm sure I had this line somewhere. By the way, are you recording this?
Or are we just talking about it? I'll delete this bit out.
don't make out you edit this. I have listened to it and seen it in action. How are you, Alex? You're the only one I haven't seen forever. You all right?
Yeah, mate. I'm well. I'm well. Good to see you.
Oh, his fucking ears turned Australian as well. Isn't he? Fuck me. If you just took the hat off with the corks on, did he, before you started?
Yeah, that's it.
Go on, press record. I had a line along the lines of, if this takes as long to put together as a fucking an issue of human blood, I'm going on holiday next Tuesday. We're fucked.
All right,
darling,
ready?
Darling, sorry, we're on a podcast thing. Your OnlyFans is later.
There you go. I was just trying to work out where to put it because I didn't want to have to hold on to it the rest of the time.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of your only fancies later, Charlie. Mark Presco, we'll be here all day.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Good evening and welcome everybody to a very, very special edition of Soma Wombles. We are actually not doing the normal weekly Soma Wombles that you'll be able to get on your podcasts wherever you get them. But actually today we are gathering together some alumni from Yellow and Blue. Yellow and Blue, for those people who weren't aware of it and never actually picked up a copy, was the unofficial official match day program put together by volunteers and Wimbledon fans as part of a protest which took on its own format. And we have gathered today the alumni, as I say, of a number of people who were involved in the production and the sales and the reading of the program. So we have our regulars, Mr. Niall Cooper. Good evening, Niall.
Good evening, Mark Lewis. How are you?
I'm well enough. I say evening, and you'll understand why I'm saying evening, even though we're recording first thing in the morning. And good evening to the man himself, the master of all buttons, Dr. Adam Proctor. Yeah,
good evening. Oh, why is it saying good evening? It's flipping 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to be awake. Why am I even here? But yes.
Yes, it is. We are very honoured to be joined by Mr. Mark Jones.
Honoured is a bit strong, but thanks.
And joining us from far away, who knows where, but it looks like up a gum tree somewhere in a treehouse in Bali, Charlie Talbot is on the pod.
I'm only in France. I'm by no means the most exotic or indeed long-missed person joining this call, but hello.
And the most long-missed person who's actually, as far as I'm aware, only been back to Plough Lane once, but I happened to run into him completely coincidentally. We are deeply honoured to be joined literally from a land down under by Mr. Alex Kirk.
G'day.
Good morning, good evening, Alex.
G'day. You know, what are you like?
What are we like, indeed?
He's going to break character at some point, isn't he, and stop doing that.
So I'm not really going to say very much, which will be a mercy to those people who normally listen to Yellow and Blue. But what I'd like to do is actually put the floor open to, especially to Jonesy and to Charlie, because Niall talks too much anyway, and to Alex, to talk about why on earth and how on earth we actually came up with an alternative match day program. And I'll chip in with my small contribution later on. So take it away, Jonesy.
Well, very quickly, I was going to say, I'm not going to remember anything we did. And most of that is because of working on Yellow and Blue. I was trying to work out, when is it that I stopped going to bed on time? And when is it that I used to just be in a permanent state of, like, completely and utterly tired? And I'm like, I'm timelining it back going, it's probably when I met them lot. So I'm not going to remember most of it other than going. And then I'm also, by the way, I need to put this out, I'm probably conflating working with Charlie with the official programme after we did Yellow and Blue, because I was going to start saying stuff like, I remember seeing, like, press passes coming back and through the letterbox at 4 a.m. When we did the official programme, Charlie used to sit outside in the car. So my wife would be going, like, what are you doing still up at, like, 4 a.m? And I'd be like, I'm just making some editorial changes. Like, who with? I'm like, Charlie. Where's Charlie? Outside in the road sitting.
I think we got lower tech. I think somewhat incredibly, we got lower tech post
we did
producing Yellow and Blue.
We did. So, and then I remembered, like, hang on a minute, there were people around, like, Alex who, like, knew how to do stuff on time, and, like, it was quite digital. So
I'm not taking all of the blame for this, and I think this is a separate therapy session we'd have to come back to.
Probably.
Niall, can you or Alex remember, what I couldn't remember, I was trying to, was that, I think the four of us had probably been in the same room, we'd spoken to each other a little bit, not very much. Obviously, the protest kicked off very quickly. I wrote that first press release that basically said this is a terrible idea in early August, because they banked our season ticket money, and then they sent something out, and Koppel sent us all a letter, and he said, we're all off to Milton Keynes at the end of the season, isn't that great news? And we all thought, no, it's not. I remember I went down on the Northern Line to meet up with Ronan Ward and a couple of others, and we got a press release out from Whistler that obviously I think we were all members of at that point that said this isn't a good idea. And then people started running off with whatever seemed most useful for them to be able to do. Kev Rye took over doing what I was doing there. People that were frankly lived in Wimbledon, I was still off at university, got involved with the protest side. And someone had an idea. Can you genuinely remember who it was that said we should do a programme, but it shouldn't be a fanzine? So if you can actually remember that.
I can. It all started on the message board of Weird and Wonderful World. It was, and it was a kid called that was referred to as Harry Potter.
I remember him now. Yeah, you're right.
He was young kid, big round black glasses. And he came up with the idea of a programme.
Ash, but he
came up with the idea, and me being an idiot, jumped on it. I was like, this is a great idea. What could possibly go wrong? And then Niall jumped in, and then one thing led to another, and literally that was it. And the next thing I remember, we were in that bar down at Broadway somewhere, and Pope was giving us £1,000. And then the next thing, it was the first issue, like literally 9 days later.
I just need to step in and quantify right there. This wasn't a guy in like a white outfit and a tall hat. with a couple of Italian security guards with him going, what are you doing with this money? Richard Pope doesn't act like a pope. Is his name? Yeah. And like you say, you know, all credit to him. I think that timeline feels weird to me, right? Because I always perceive it in terms of, and obviously it's different. It's difficult to kind of align all these like moments up, right? And I know people have tried. I know Niall's tried to write a book a couple of times that he got everyone else to do for him, and he just put his name on the front. I always like saying that to him because I'm sure it was very hard work. But I just like to do that. That's what we're going to do all the way through this, right? But I always kind of try and line up, when did we do that and when did we do that? And in my head, we were pro. There you go. This is your time. It should have been called. I always like to think that the programme was really early on and we were protesting with it. I didn't think, if you'd have asked me, Charlie, I wouldn't have said it was way before Koppel had kind of like come out and sort of said, this is it. I thought it was earlier than that. It always feels to me like it was one of the first things that we did that was like collective and started to kind of politicise people. I always talk about this moment, right? I mean, to politicise people who didn't really care for it. And when I say this to people, like the club are doing a documentary and I've remembered stuff like this and said it to them, and they're all a little bit like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And they make me go, say that again. Like, that's really interesting. There were people literally coming up to us going, sit down and watch the football. I mean, that was the phrase we all used, right? But we picked that up from people literally saying to us, why are you interrupting football? Can't you just shut up and get on with it? You know, what's it got to do with us type thing? You know, and we had to convert those people, right, into kind of not even believers, but understanders. So there was two things, I think, right? Or three, there's a sidebar one. One of them was when we had that meeting and said, don't buy a season ticket because they're going to use your money against you, right? So that was either before the point you're talking about, Charlie, when they came out.
So they'd already taken our season ticket money. Right? No, that was at the same time because they banked the season ticket money quite deliberately. And in fact, Ray Armfield put online recently, I think we've all forgotten this to some extent because this obviously was massively important. And I think you're right about yellow and blue. What happened through this year really helped galvanise the fan base to mean that even though we ultimately lost the battle, we rather won the war because we converted more people's hearts and minds to it. And also we proved we could do stuff together. But they banked all the money from the season tickets. And about 4 weeks earlier, there was an article in the Evening Standard saying Wimbledon have given up on Wimbledon or something like that. Ray Armfield stuck it online. We can probably find it and stick it in the link to the episode. And in that, Koppel had said to the Standard in July, the Greyhound Stadium doesn't work. We are looking at some other things and we'll kind of let people know or something. Obviously, by July, yes, they already knew what they were about to announce. And I'd forgotten he'd done that, if I'm honest. And I think that I believe that statement came out just before a home game, the first home game. And I think quite quickly we scrambled to do a couple of things. And you're right, Mark. One of them was they've got our season ticket money. They're not getting anything else. So don't buy a beer in the ground. This way everyone also started drinking and meeting in the Farley. Don't buy a burger. Don't buy a programme. And I think that was when someone equally flipped and said, well, if we're going to, we could replace that bit.
Yeah.
And also alongside that, the other thing that really came out of that was the idea that it would be something bigger than that. It would be, we're not going to do a fanzine. You know, it's not going to be Hoof. It's going to have all of the boring football bits. We're playing Barnsley. It's this, it's that. But then to Alex's point, we scrambled to do it so quickly. It came out, I'm pretty certain, we only missed one home game. So I think we'll have done one home game when we all probably met in person and said, how the hell are we going to do this? And then we had that meeting on the Broadway. And we came out by the second home game of the season. So in everyone's brains, it feels like we covered the whole season because, you know, to all intents and purposes.
So I think we did have a pre-season. I think the original part of that kind of timeline was we had that meeting upstairs at Crystals and I remember saying to people, you're going to give them your money and they're going to use your money to fight you and pay a solicitor to tell lies about everything, which obviously we know they went on and did, right? And I think, so we took some people there. So we'd set this kind of stall out of saying, we need to kind of do stuff. You know, we need to start. I mean, we're always very organised. We've been organised since like the mid-80s, right? With the anti-Palace stuff. I talk about my early games being told by somebody, sit down at the end of the game, mate. And I'm like, why? We're protesting. And thinking like, hey, I only come to get pissed and watch football. You know, and that kind of like, and that drew me into that kind of like slightly militant sort of like, fuck the owner sort of thing, you know, like way early on. So that kind of gathered up, didn't it? We picked people as we went along. I think some of us were always likely to not buy South African fruit or whatever it was we were doing in our own lives or march against CND and talking about myself here, obviously. But I think we're all those sort of people, right? We're all ready for this kind of, okay, you know, what do you need? You know, I'm going to join in. I'll join the militia if you need me to. And then we had those people who were kind of not joining dots and kind of going, but I'm a Wimbledon fan, why would I not buy a season ticket? So we'd had that conversation. Then I think you're right, Charlie. Then we got this letter where we kind of went, what did we tell you? And then when we got together with the programme, because the bit that was mad, right, was nobody just walked past and went, I'm not buying that. My recollection is like straight away we killed the programme.
Yeah.
And that bit I was going to say, the other bit we did, that sidebar, was we went forever going like, there's no presence in Wimbledon. And then I opened a club shop and like day two, we all went, we ain't buying anything from here. And they're like all looking at each other going, you've been asking for this for 10 years. And we're like, well, you know, you got your timing wrong. I mean, you know, there's pictures of that sprayed on the window. And then I think I said to somebody, he got smashed up. And everyone's like, really? And I was like, well, maybe somebody just wrote something naughty on the window. You know, I don't think he got obliterated. He didn't get burnt to the floor, did it? We just kind of like didn't go in there eventually.
This is Wimbledon Broadway. People don't do polite things like that, you know.
It was WFC, RIP.
Yeah. I was just going to really quickly ask everybody, where were they? What were they doing when this all came about? Because 25 years later, we all know each other. Some of us are close by. Someone like Alex is far away across the world. But what were we actually all individually doing before we got involved with the whole yellow and blue?
So I'll go quick. I'll go quickly there, right, Mark, because obviously I was plotting all of this out in my head last night. What happened is, right, I'd been working on football websites at the BBC and later on at other places as a web designer. And kind of like, I was... Yellow and Blue was the first time I sat with Quot. And I think, Alex, you was designing and stuff, right? Because I remember you kind of going... You need to do it in Quark sort of thing. And it was the first time I kind of went, all right, I'll do a bit of print design. I'm completely self-taught, right? So I knew nothing about it. And there was a brilliant moment, right, where I went to the printers and the guy that was, like, proofing it for me said, have you got a minute, mate? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he's like, it's a load of shit what you're sending. Like, it's not ready for print. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, have you got an hour? And he literally sat and went, do it like this. Because I was sending RGB images over. You know, I didn't know the difference between... you know, print gamuts and all stuff like that. So I kind of knew how to lay stuff out and typography and had half a clue, do you know what I mean? But he literally, this guy in a printer just spent an hour with me and I'll forever, like, you know, be grateful for him because he just sat there and said to me, like, export like this, you know, and because I was so keen to make it work, I was like, okay, and took it all in. And then the best bit was, and this is the bit that's blessed me, you're all smile about this, do you know how much of a Mac head I am and an Apple fanboy, is he went, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm doing it on this amazing PC, and he just went, fuck that off, mate, get a Mac. And I was like, oh, okay. I need to buy a Mac, darling. They're very expensive. And I remember, Alex, you had like an Apple II or something, right? I remember coming around your flat. Yeah. Was it your flat in Putney? Yeah, I remember seeing it in the corner, like this monolith, and kind of going like, oh, that looks nice. Do you know what I mean? And at that point, right, I think I was probably working for myself, because this tumbles into AFC Wimbledon, because I'd done all that print design around Yellow and Blue. That's, you know, this whole bit about, and then I turn up at the meeting with a badge and with a kit and everything. That's why, because I was kind of self-employed, sitting there trying to sort of work out to be a graphic designer. I was like, oh, I'll do a kit while I'm doing a pro, you know. So I tell people, did a website. The website was the easy bit. That's what I knew how to do. Did a website, did a program, did a crest, and did a kit. Like, here I am still doing that sort of stuff, right? But it was Yellow and Blue was almost like my kind of formative years. And to the point that I look back at old copies of it and just go, that is awful. Who did that? Oh, yeah, it was me. Right?
I thought it was great.
But the content, I think it was...
But the content was sterling, of course.
So Alex did... I'd forgotten that. That Alex, I think, yeah, helped us get the bare bones around doing it. Because I think Niall and I were quite similar in that I understood how to use Quark, but very much from once everyone else had done the hard work. I couldn't in a million years have turned a blank page into something. But the previous year I'd edited the student newspaper, and that kind of meant that other people had done all the layouts, but you would then spend hours until 4 a.m, which seems to be a bit of a theme here, you know, in the office while all the other younger students had buggered off. It's the only paper where the more senior you got, frankly, the worse the job got. So you were the one there trying to make articles fit in or trying to treat photos so that they would actually work when they came out in print, and then eventually sitting there sending the thing down an ISDN line. So when the idea came up, I'd spent quite a lot of time doing text layout and Quark and writing and editing. So I think that was why I stuck my hand up. And that then meant we had Niall as the only person actually employed as a journalist at the time, wasn't it, Niall?
Yeah, I was working for The Independent. I'd done a few magazines and stuff like that, design-wise. We got this bootleg copy of Quark. I don't know where it came from or whatever. And
Quark just is it all right to admit that now, do we think? Statute of limitations has expired. Okay, so yeah.
There might
be
a reason for that.
Yellow and Blue was brought to you on some bootleg copies of Quark.
I had no idea where it came from. And obviously then, those days, it wasn't data, you know, there was no kind of password protection or anything like that. So we all got it, and then we were just literally sending files around at 3 or 4 a.m. or whatever, and I don't know. There was some, I mean, my kind of great memories. I'm not on the timeline, so it was the Black Balloons protest was the first game, and then we all
first
kind of
game
on.
But that was an away game though, Niall, because that was Watford away. Because my girlfriend at the time had never been to a football match, and was absolutely baffled by, understandably, everything about it. Because first of all, we all went to Watford. Then we all threw balloons in the air. Then Paul Hill got sent off for handling outside the box, which should only have been a yellow card. But, you know, not that I'm bitter about it. And so basically the game was just people being angry. They were either angry before throwing balloons in the air or angry during the game at the referee. And Yeah.
To be honest, that season, I'm not sure if I remember very many of the games. I just remember like the fun of all the rest of it. So we were like kind of, just my memory of it was we turned up, it was Pope had given us £2,000, right? And like,
this is going up, by the way. I was going to say, by the end of the podcast, the actual Pope has sent over £1 billion.
£1,000 is a lot of money.
Yes, we've got money, right? We've stolen Quark. We've got money, right? Alex has got a man. I've got a PC that is unfit for the job. Why do we do a programme? Why do we do something special?
We met, I mean, the point with we're Pope, right? Because we invited Ash, the guy whose idea was. He wasn't allowed in because it was a pub and he was only 15.
Right? Okay, so let's start over. We stole an idea from a young boy. We stole an idea for a young boy. We got a funder. This is a Guy Ritchie movie, really, isn't it? Right. Then we met in a pub. That bit would be really good. They're probably, they licensed a great soundtrack for this as well, right? Noel turns up with a little hat with press written on it, right, in a Mac. Charlie's probably dialing in from somewhere, like 4 in the morning. Alex is the only one who knows what he's doing, and then we'll get round to this, and then Mark turns up as the fence, right?
James, you said it earlier, you had half a clue, and I swear to God, that should be the title of the film. I don't think we have more than half a clue.
But in the land of the blind, right? Look around the room.
See, the thing with it is, I remember at the time, I think it might have been you, Alex, or whatever, later on, who said... What magazine company ever goes from like vague idea to print, not even like concept, in 25 days? That's what we did. It was like it appeared on the website. The 15-year-old kid goes, "Oh, this program's a cool idea. Why don't you do it?" We then go like, I don't know, 10 days later, meet in a pub. Some rando bloke turns up with a check for £2,000, and then we've got a program saying out. Nobody knows it's going to make any money. Nobody knows whether it's going to completely bomb or anything like that. Mark Lewis has got like 2,000 programs in the back of his car or in the Farley. We're distributing around with random program sellers that we'd never met, all getting cash on. And I think the big turning point was when over the tannoy, so we're all outside, the tannoy goes, "There is a program being sold outside, yellow and blue. It is not the official program. Don't buy the official program." And at that point, I think every single program seller that we had, so they had this massive fucking queue because everybody's going, "It's not the official one. Yeah. Time to buy."
That's the BBC. Yeah. That's the BBC banning the Sex Pistols moment, right? Or relax. That's when Frankie Goes to Hollywood gets thrown off of Radio One. We all go, "What a great move!" And by the way, for the record, we've got this £2,000. We're taking all this cash. I think the one thing that's really important is that the spirit around people handing that money over in good faith and us genuinely all laughing aside, genuinely going, "It's for the cause" type thing. Because it kind of, to my mind, it kind of wiped its beak, right? We wasn't sitting there going, "This is difficult to do." It kind of started taking care of business, right? It wasn't like massively profitable. Because I remember us trying to get adverts and stuff, and I'm sure we're going to get round to the famous Grolsch advert as well, right? That was never Grolsch, obviously. We just had a man who worked there and went, yeah, it's approved.
It was Woody. I checked this out.
Yeah.
But this is the point, Woody, right? It was approved by Woody.
But I think that was that our only sold advert, though? I seem to recall that we allowed... There was paid sponsorship as well, wasn't there? I think people gave us 20 to 50 quid and their name was in as a paid sponsor and that basically covered the print costs.
Yeah.
And we always said, you know, ad sales were welcome, but weirdly big corporates were not falling over themselves.
That was my bit. You guys concentrate on actually producing the thing and making it look like a proper program that people would want to spend money on. And my bit was, let's just get random people. Bearing in mind, 25 years back, you know, the intricacies and the technology just didn't exist. So I guess email was just about up and running. Getting people to literally to like, you know, hand me bits of paper at games or whatever and say, "Yeah, I'll give you a fiver if you'll put, you know, up the Don's, love, Charlie and Niall."
I remember that being one of the big conversations, by the way, at the beginning. And I think that it was everyone except Jonesy, to my memory. We were all saying we should undercut the official program in price and make it cheaper. And in my head, I've got Jonesy going, "Fuck that, make them all cough up." Being really, really aggro.
I should be, right. Yeah. If I was in this like villa in like the south of France, now, a massive sort of vista behind me. Yeah, that's right.
I think it's actually one of the most important decisions we made, because it didn't cheapen the thing and it allowed it to actually make some money. I remember that conversation very clearly.
I'll tell you what it did, right? I think with it being a similar price point, probably my genesis for that was, let's make it look as much like the official program as we can. And that again speaks to, you know, this is interwoven with what happened next, which is the club, right? Was that kind of stance of CCL years where you turn up and it'd be like a photocopied four pager, which I'm not scoffing at, by the way. It was adequate for those clubs. And you know, I'm sure every single one of us has got nothing but love for that level of football that we were at. You know, and I always talk about it, resetting what football really means. Because we'd gone from these sit down and watch the football to going to people who were not just sitting down and watching football, they were running the football club type thing, right? But that whole kind of, why are we doing a 48-page four-colour programme in the CCL? Because we can, because we know how to do it. And because also you've got a fan base that have gone Premier League to CCL in like, whatever it was, 2 years, right? Or that little gap in the middle, the championship bit in the middle, which wasn't very long, because by the time we'd been in our second season of that, I think, was when it all started going sideways. Yeah. So I kind of like, I wanted us to go, let's give it as a proper alternative, not just a kind of a rogue kind of cause. The more we make it look like the official programme, the easier it will be for somebody not to buy it by mistake, although that was lovely if they did. And some people did used to, right, by the way. I can remember anecdotal tales of people going, I thought this was the real programme. And we're like, it is, mate. You know, like, deal with
this. There's actually more about Nottingham Forest or whoever in here than there is in that one, by the way. Because, Niall, do you remember, was it just you and I? We had hours, and I mean hours, with talking to lawyers about whether or not you could print the fixtures. Because that was quite recently, it only just become a thing. And whether we could get permission or not to print fixtures, which just struck me as mad. It never occurred to me with my very meagre student media law training. I just assumed that something like fixtures would be, you know, a statement, a factual thing, and they weren't. And there was a big thing around whether or not we could do that. Because results you have to be allowed to say.
Yeah.
But fixtures, we spent ages arguing. But I think we eventually did pretty much have permission for the fixtures, because everyone assumed when we asked for it that we'd be a joke. So they let, I think somehow we got permission for fixtures, but then we had a huge issue with images.
Yeah, to be fair, Charlie, there'll be people listening now who just don't know that, right? They just think you can just go, all right, we'll make it look the same. And obviously there was websites where you go like, what, are they going to come after me for saying that? It was like, well, no, you're not making any money out of it, but you're selling that thing. And also don't forget, what we were doing was rogue. It was rogue, right? Yeah. It was like the football club could go to the authorities going, you've got to shut this down type thing. I'm pleased you mentioned photos. The biggest pain in the ass by miles was photos.
Yeah.
Because I'd worked at the BBC, I was like, we're going to get fucked royally if we start doing this.
Yeah.
If we start nicking stuff, number one, someone's going to go, have you paid for it? And then number two, the club will be able to say, bang, bang, they ain't paid for it, go after them. And then if not, well, we'll go after him then in a roundabout way. So I remember kind of like, if you look at the covers, there's so many that are like zoomed in on and blurred. And I was like, it was one of those ones of like, if I fuck around with it, no one's going to know it's their photo. I'm like, it's clearly my photo you fucked around with, mate, right? Because you've stopped at a certain point. But I think you can watch through the timeline of photos in there. Do you remember we started going to fans, take a photo and send it to us? We were using like, and I was getting stuff that was like this big and taken from the back of the stand on the worst camera ever going, and then blowing it up. And then that's why the printer guy was going to me, what is this, mate? And I was like, right, some of it's my fault. Some of it ain't going to change. Whatever we try and do, it's going to stay that bad. But I just think it's really fascinating. It's fascinating putting together how kind of difficult it was to get this out the door. Do you know what I mean? For those reasons.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. I mean, I remember the legal battles. We had loads of legal battles. Because there was we should go into the goal shape, right? So Woody was leaving whichever advertising company was with, right? It was this last week. So he pushed through the Grolsch ad without them knowing, without them kind of getting full approval. He just said, right, I'm approving this, because he was in that position to approve it. So he did a Grolsch ad for it saying, stop, this club is not ready for killing yet. And it was approved. So it was actually totally legit. And I know that because we got a letter from Coppell's lawyers saying, you're doing this ad, many letters I got from Coppell's lawyers. You're doing this ad, and it's got to be, you know, we're going to do you for that. And I'm going, you can try if you want, but this one's totally legit. You know, so that he was like really effed off because of it, you know, all that rest of it.
Mark, you've got to go through 7,000 pages now and find a golf advert. And Niall, if you remember what one it was in, I'm going to start officially getting scared and worried about
it. that's the first year at the club he's got there. That's not the Wimbledon FC year, I don't think.
Because yes, that's the other is. Point as well. Yes, you're right, is. Charlie. That's the other bit. That when
Chris
we went
Wilmot
into
was
the...
one of the first covers.
Yeah, oh, when I talk about going into the August 2001.
Very good. See, so we did only miss one game. Our unreliable memory isn't that bad. And to Mark's point, that's a very, very blurred cover.
Yeah, just so everyone knows.
There you go. Yeah. Are the fixtures in the back, Mark? This is terrible. This is terrible audio listening. But Mark, are the fixtures in the back?
Something on camera for the podcast, and so Mark has got a folder of all the programs. Basically, mine are randomly distributed somewhere in the loft because Mark is organised.
So we had the fixtures in the first edition, but I can't honestly remember now, Niall, if that was before we actually went and got permission.
Charlie, on the fact that Charlie's already listed in many, many, many things that we did that might not have been completely legit, we might want to just kind of brush over that.
I think on the fixtures, we got permission. I think we were surprised because it was like PA or whoever, and I think whoever it was genuinely thought this is not serious, and therefore we got permission at the beginning. And had we kind of done three episodes, three editions, and it proved that it wasn't, you know, awful, I don't think we would have done. So I'm pretty certain that the fixture thing was legit. Some of the other areas, I agree, were a bit more of a grey area, but probably by now, has Koppel stopped sending you letters, Niall? That's the question. Do you still get them? You know, another thing you said about me, because basically the editorial, obviously, again, in media law, you were down as the editor, which means it's all your fault, which is something I think a lot of journalists these days have forgotten, particularly online. Yeah. So every editorial, whether signed or not, meant that anything where we said Koppel has lied, which we did say, you know, Koppel has lied and produced information about what we considered to be a lie, that meant that Niall got personally chased by Koppel and his lawyers on about a weekly basis.
Yeah, so like, what on that, on the Koppel, just on the Koppel lawyers thing, right? So there was the Grolshad, because it was Andrew. We got a voice note from Andrew Judge, by the way, who says, like, you know, brilliant, we're really happy to be involved in all the rest of it. We printed out that whole list of lies that he had, and we did it in the headline, Koppel is a liar, right? Which is a big editorial decision. And like, yes, he came after us, but we could prove every point of it. So we had it backed up. So it was legit. So we had that. We had the Grolshad. We had Philo doing whatever Philo did, which was basically, my God, if we weren't legal checking, I think, Alex, that was you doing the legal checking on Philo's copy, which was, I mean, that was like, Philo's was probably the most entertaining column in Yellow and Blue by a mile, but it was a legal nightmare because he didn't really hold back. And I think Charlie or Alex, whoever it was, one of you two doing it, I just remember
it wasn't me.
It wasn't me. I hate to break this to you, it wasn't me either.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. When Adam was asking, hang on, should we be saying this out loud? For the record, if you go back through the spine, I laid it out, right? I just did the layout.
Exactly.
I didn't approve any of it. I did do the Grolsch advert. I did design the Grolsch advert.
Alex, which of you and me?
That was you.
Alex, which of you and me do you reckon had had more media training? Because I don't think either of us have had a huge amount of media law training.
Damn sure wasn't me.
Alex, what was you actually technically doing day to day when we did this? Because in my mind, you were the guy that kind of knew what he was doing. I'd known Charlie anyway, and I must have known Niall before then as well. Because that's the other bit that blurs with timelines, right? When people go like, yeah, we were mates, we knew each other. And I know everyone like casually throws in,
I didn't know any of you before.
Yeah. If you look at the timeline, right, of where we were in the world and what we were up to, there you go, there's a Grolsch ad. I thought I did a version with a picture of the bottle on it, and then we were like, no, like, we definitely shouldn't be doing their product. But I did do their logo, right, which made it look legit, okay? In terms of timeline, there'd been that Carling chat site, right? Do you remember the Carling one? So Carling set up, like, notice boards, and there was one for every single football club. And the Wimbledon one very quickly turned into protests were in there, you know, and complaints about the way the club was being run. And then that ended up on my website in that, you know, in the chat site. that kind of, I think, was the bit that made it different. It's not one of those typical ones where my wife go, who did you meet rich this week, darling? Right? It was like, well, I invented WhatsApp in 2000, right? It worked like WhatsApp, didn't it? Like, if you wasn't at the big, if you know, if you joined in the conversation, it was gone. So it was very much like walking in the pub and going, what were you all chatting about? And I think that was a success for me. It wasn't because it was a technical genius idea, right? And it wasn't because it was my website. Just everybody ended up there. I still get people going to me, yeah, I met you on your website. And I'm like, what? Not those people that I meet on that other website, right? But you know, that kind of like, we did end up with a hangout. It was like a digital version. And then when we decided to not go to the club and spend any money there, the Farley, right? So we had these two kind of like nests where we would sit and talk about all this stuff, which is why people can't remember where they met each other, because it was like we'd all spoken to each other forever. And then we, oh, you're Niall, are you? Do you know what I mean? And so in our heads, we can't work out when we all met. The Alex one is just like, I think it was, my memory was always, there's this guy over here who knows what he's doing. And look, he's got an Apple II. And I was like, well, he's basically, or was it a Mac? It was a Mac clone, wasn't it, Alex? I'm making it sound better than it was.
But I'll tell you now, then as now, I talked a fucking good game. And that works. I'd just come down from college, and so all my mates have been still going to the games, but I've been up in Edinburgh, so I hadn't been to anything else. And so I was like, I want to kind of get back involved, just as all of this stuff kind of blew up. And me being, as you say, Mark, about, you know, that kind of type, it was kind of like catnip to me. It was like, right, fine. Come on, let's go and have a dig at this. But all I'd done up until that point was entirely self-taught. It was just I'd done stuff for the radio. I'd started magazines and things while at college. But, yeah, half a clue was generous. And enthusiasm, that was basically it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm very glad it came off like I knew what I was doing. I really didn't.
And I know I keep coming back to this, but it's kind of like I knew this all along, but it's dawning on me more and more when I thought about, like, what we got. And by the way, this isn't a kind of Genesis story going, if it wasn't for us, by the way, because I'm minded that I always do that. You know, I know some people get a little bit kind of disturbed by why are these guys getting the credit? And it's like, it was all of these things, right? You know, and I'm mindful like that when we talk about the start of the football club. But all of these bits prepared a lot of people for what we ended up doing. You know, and the bit to point out to people who wasn't there at the beginning, that Yellow and Blue Road programme flipped straight into the club's programme, right? It, like Charlie just said, that's the club one, not our rogue one. So we kind of went, when the club was formed, it was like, well, we got the programme, we've already done that. Do you know what I mean? It was like people ready to go and kind of a lot of self-taught people. And I think it's really important to say out loud that to anyone who's young and is listening, right? Self-taught people who had a good idea and didn't give a fuck and had something to get on with, just got on with it, right? And to varying degrees, we've all ended up using all of those skills we made up ourselves later on in life, but definitely to the betterment of AFC Wimbledon. So when I go to work later on and walk in the stadium and see that stadium, you know, and this is poignant. It happens to me every morning. I'm like, how the fuck did I get here, right? And the genesis story for me is, I'm working with the BBC on the football website. Then I meet you guys and we're like knocking out this program, right? And then there I am now, head of brand, comms and marketing at the football club, right? Because I got involved with you guys. Not because I studied any of that. I made it all up as I went along. But because, like, we're all so intertwined. And then the other bit is as well that dawned on me last night. Mark, Charlie, Niall and myself have all been on the board. We've all been elected to the board. We've all been involved. That's no slight on you, Alex, by the way. I don't know whether you disappeared to throw boomerangs at possums or whatever by that point. Wherever it is you get up to down there. But, you know, like, we'd all kind of played a little part in it. But this programme and that protest readied us to kind of then go... and again, I think people look back on it, like, we didn't just complain and, like, and rampage around going, this is shit. We kind of went, this is shit, and this is what you should have done.
Yeah.
And then we got a chance to go, right. And then, by the way, the bit that came out in this conversation that just flew past sort of thing, and some people would have grabbed it and gone, what? Is we went to the ground stadium, and the council said, build a football stadium here. And Charles Copper went, yeah, can't do that. And then I'm going to go and walk in there later on and go, like, well, actually, turns out you can do that if you want to. Sort of thing. So I don't think, not to sort of blow smoke up our arses, because lots of people around the fringes of what we did, but I think it's important to how we got where we got to, the way we reacted to that injustice. Yeah, no, do you know what I mean?
I was going to say the thing, because I've seen it on a few of the chats and whatever, people, you know, talk about, oh, this, like various bits, and you have to remind them and say, no, we had a stadium plan. We had this. We did this thing. Just none of it was listened to in any capacity. And I think that is important. Like you say, we weren't just complaining. We were doing stuff. We were proving there was options. But it was always a...
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the time that I was buying yellow and blue, but my dad was still buying the official programme. And so we were kind of like comparing notes. And it was kind of funny because I was like, but Dad, look, everything in here is like completely a lie. Look, like what is actually going on, you know? And so that was kind of, you know, and it was, yeah. It does amaze me that on various chats you see people saying, well, what about this? And it's like, no, we tried, we said all these things, we did stuff.
So what I think...
Yeah,
and there was a big overlap. There was a big overlap with Whistler there as well.
What was really interesting, yeah, totally, because Whistler was basically the yellow and blue was the official voice. Well, not official, but like Whistler had a very, very strong content throughout the whole of that program, and the stuff that Whistler was saying was never going to get much, much noise from any official channel. Right, so we were distributing the program into the players' lounge and stuff like that. So loads of people were getting aware of it, and we were outselling the official program 3-1. And we know that from the stats that were given. It was just what I remember is at the start of the season, like Jonesy was saying at the start, there were loads of people going like, "Oh, just there's nothing we can do. Just sit down, watch the football. I'm not really bothered." By the end of that protest season, it was the turn your backs on the game protest.
Yeah,
and great. It was like. Nearly everybody turned their back. So you can see the pictures. It's like, you know, there's a couple of people who are like looking like that over their shoulders, but everybody's back was on the ground. And that showed how much we transformed the fan base into realizing there was an alternative and that the club, what the club was doing was wrong. And I think that for me, the brilliant work that Whistler was doing, the brilliant work, well, what we were doing with Yellow and Blue and Tony taking that narrative and getting it out there was transformative. I totally think that AFC Wimbledon really struggled had the club moved straight to that town in Buckinghamshire without that season, because that season gave us the programme, gave us Whistler to really build it up, and it meant
gave us Don's trust as well in the February, Niall. So you actually had all of the strands got put in place, because Whistler commissioned, to Mark's point, we didn't just stand there and go, you could build a stadium here. Whistler commissioned architects, so we were in touch with architects. Did a load of PR stuff around that, as you rightly said. It got ignored by the national press, but we were a mouthpiece in which, to Adam's point, you could have Reg Davis talking his column, which would say, you know, why won't everyone just move to Milton Keynes with me? But we would go, look, here is a costed. I mean, obviously it would cost me, but here is a costed. Here's an actual stadium on the footprint designed from these architects who are real architects. You know, here's all of this. So we had 4 pages on, you know, here's Nottingham Forest, exactly. And then we have, you know, Philo's column, and we'd have match reports, but we then would have quite detailed. So if you wanted to read it, here's this. Then in February, the Don's Trust gets launched, and obviously the stated aim of the Don's Trust is to have a place on the board of Wimbledon FC. So by the end of the season, you're absolutely right. You've got, it is a bit like How to Start a Revolution, isn't it? You've got a propaganda wing that can control the press. you've got the organisation in place to be the Politburo, which is going to run something. And you've got all these technical advisors who've all come out of the woodwork and gone, oh, by the way, I support this club. How can I help? And then that means that when you then get, and then I totally agree with Niall. That was a kind of spine tingling moment for me doing that protest, because we'd discussed it the previous August. We'd said, what if we all go to a game and don't watch? And those of us who were really angry said, that won't work, because if only 30% of us do it, that'll be counterproductive and we'll look like we are just, you know, an angry fridge. And because we did it right at the end of the year, and because all of those things had happened, but one of the things was, while being told about the football, people had been told the truth of this. When we looked round at that point, it never occurred to me we'd lose the 3-man commission, by the way, but more importantly, because it was before then, I looked behind and went, well, we've won, right? 90% of the stadium are with us. So we're all in agreement with each other, and we're not agreeing with Coppell and Reg Davis. And that, I think, came from all of those things coming together. And apparently it ruined Michele Ligatwood's day, but you know, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs.
Picking up on Jonesy's point about legacy, that is massive, because the people who were actually passing the yellow and blue around in crystals at Selhurst Park were the likes of Kathy Cork, as was Alan Cork's ex-wife, and Anne Eames, and obviously we know what happened with Terry and Anne, obviously being involved with AFC Wimbledon. And the people that then jumped in and just helped out as volunteers with me on a match day, apart from my wife, you had a bunch of other people who were at school who were doing various random things. Nigel Higgs was there, who went on to become youth and community director. You know, his two daughters helped out, and they were probably 12, 13. So he had to chaperone them. And I know now, 25 years later, one of them still lives nearby and brings her husband and their young child to the game. So all these things carry on all the way through. Sam Elliott, who's now a respected football journalist, was there. His brother still works out as a volunteer in the in the club shop. Matt helped out my old brother. And the genesis of what is Seymour Wombles actually came through that season as well, because we all got to know each other. Some bloke called Martin Drake got to know each other, and at the end of that season, Niall got married. And the rest of that is, as they say, is history.
Yeah, so like, you know, I got married, and at my wedding was Martin Drake, and so Martin Drake's marriage is the responsibility of that. So, you know, so sorry.
You're responsible for inviting him.
It would be better if you'd married Martin.
For those who don't know, Martin got off with one of the bridesmaids and got married to one of the bridesmaids. And
There's one other bit I want to chuck into the timeline here as well, right, because this is lost on some people. The first time we fell out with a football club, and of course we've been fighting mergers with Palace and all that nonsense with Ron Nodes and all these merry men, right, was the website. Do you remember that the website was shit? We launched a club website that was terrible, right, and we all hated it. And we said to the club, can you change that? It's not very good, is it? And the club kind of went, what's it got to do with you lot? We were like, well, we're your fans and this is for us, isn't it? And they were like, go away, shut up. And that's the first time, I think, the club actually said something out loud and proved it, concrete. We didn't give a fuck what you guys think. You know, that was a real kind of spark, that bit, that lit a flame, where mild-mannered people just went, hang on a minute. You know, like people who were early adopters are going, what? But we're trying to help. We're trying to give you, you know, a hand in making our lives better, and then the ecosystem we're all in together, owners, staff, employees, and fans, we're just trying to make our world better. Like, why would you not want to do that? And then, you know, they were very obviously go away. And then you have that moment where the day they knock down Plough Lane, Reg Davies is in the official programme, boo-hooing over Aston Villa moving a bit of their stadium or painting something they shouldn't. And we're all reading it going, they just knocked our stadium down, mate. And the club aren't even mentioning it. And so those kind of, you know, which is why I talk back to that four founding fathers or even the guys that did the programme and all that sort of thing. All these little things took people with them. So it's absolutely true. By the way, four people did sit in a garage and go, what are we going to do? Niall, by the way, was probably like the fifth Beatle because he did the paperwork bit, right? Turned up, went, I've been to the London FA, there's the paperwork. And by the way, there are thousands of people like that. So I always go, four people became 40, became 400, 4,000 sort of thing. But all these people, as Mark's touched on, I think there's more kind of inherited memory of how we got where we got to in that stadium on a match day than we think. I guess the trick is, how relevant does that remain to people who come along now? So when we get fans saying, why are we fan owned? I don't care. There's a bit of me that kind of goes, all right, I don't want to get up and be granddad talking about the war and everyone going, what? Shut up, old man, and turning up their punk tape on the bus and me going, you kids are today. Do you know what I mean? It's different if you go, granddad, was you in the war? What happened? You know, there are people who want to understand it. So I think there is an importance, and clearly this is something that I try and do from within the club, right, is to kind of go, we don't want to keep banging on about this kind of cause. Are we a cause? I sometimes say, you know, it's a cause with a lowercase c, or where I want us to feel like we're always on a mission. And I think the difference now is whether it's accidental, whether we ended up here and it wasn't the plan at the beginning, I think we should always be a football club that looks like it gives a shit, cares about its fans. You know, what does fan ownership mean? Especially if we go into this 50+1 world that we're now entering, you know, and this potential investors and stuff like that. What does it mean to be fan owned? I think ultimately, being fan-owned means if the people that own the football club start to turn into the club we had before, where they go, what's he got to do with you? There's enough of us organised. There's enough of a mechanism for us to go, well, you're going to fucking find out. And so even if it feels like we can't run a football club top to bottom, I said this the other day, if you think we've forgotten how to protest, or you think we've forgotten how to get together and go, nah, that ain't happening, don't test it, because you'll find out really, really quickly that we still have got that muscle memory, and there's enough people that feel like that it's their football club. You know, and that's the same thing. I know it's a bit of a TED talk now, but that's that same thing about giving away membership to people who've got season tickets. Those people called themselves owners of a football club already. All we've done now is help them join the dots. Do you know what I mean?
There's a couple of things I think are really important about that, because there was the 11 million quid hole that Charlie and the bond discovered. And I look at it as going, those people...
To be clear, we didn't discover it. We just came out with a suggestion of how to fill it.
Charlie in the Plough Lane bond sounds like a movie that should have been really brilliant if it was made in the 70s and no one would like the new version.
It's the sequel to the Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah.
I love it. There you go. You got the whole set of series here. Yeah. But like you and Woody and Price and Graham Price, there was four of you.
Zab.
Of course, yeah. Zab. Right. So that work that you did then was exactly what Jonesy talks about when he talks about muscle memory. Because it was like, we actually are all kind of campaigners who care passionately about football being at the heart of the community. And what the Plough Lane Bun did there was phenomenal, because it said, there is an alternative and we can do it because we're fans and all the rest of it. And where I get a tingle, and I did it every single time, is when I walk into the ground, like you do, Jonesy, and I remember the very first time I did it, and you walk in and go, every brick, every blade of grass, every seed is the blood, sweat and tears of the fans. We own this. And no other club can do that. And that is utterly unique. And I think if you're talking about the new generation of fans, there are very few other clubs, like maybe Exeter and a couple of, you know, lower league clubs and so on, that can do that. And that is really, really unique. And that is, what did we do in the war? What we did in the war was meant that you walk into the ground and this blade of grass, this brick, this seed is yours. And I think that is so different and so unique. And I trace that a lot back to, that meeting in the Broadway where we met randomly, and Pope gives us that £2,000, and where we're in that garage with... You know, I'm in that.
It's gone up to £9,000 now, by the way. Yeah. Every time you mention it, just add another grand to it.
Yeah. that's how we plugged the 10 million quid. Hopey gave it to us. Yeah, we just put it in a compound interest account.
By the time we worked out Pope's kind of like ratio over the years, it was like, is that Richard? Is that the Pope? Yeah, it's 10. Yes. Yeah, it's 10. It was actually
I think, Niall, you're correct, though. And in fact, the bond, in a way, as you say, it was really just a return to things that we'd done before, because the reason why Yellow and Blue worked is because someone had the crazy idea. We stole the idea off a child, which I'd totally forgotten. Thanks, Alex. But we had just about enough of a clue to know how to do it and to do it, frankly, properly and in many ways better. I mean, we're mocking our own design skills, but if you go back and look at the old club program at the time that Reg was doing on his computer, it's not cutting edge design we were up against. So we looked very serious against that. At the same time, when someone said we should have one of these supporters trust things, you know, they went to Brian Lomax, they went to the guys at Supporters Direct. So by February, we had what at the time was, pretty much kind of cutting edge fan protest stuff. Everyone with Wissa had done every other kind of protest. You know, we blocked coaches once. They'd done every other kind of thing. They were super, super organized. Wissa were doing stuff every week around all the other things. There were the guys who were compiling the evidence to the commission. I mean, that's beyond the scope of this chat, but the quality of evidence we put in that then just gets traduced and insulted in the commission report is incredible, and all the people that went and spoke to that. So really all we kind of did with the bond was the same thing, where we were quite angry in a room at the moment. It's quite a fractious meeting. Four of us have said we think we should do this, but the difference, to Mark's point, was the people on the stage went, okay then. And then the next week we had a meeting, and I didn't really know, for example, Ed Leake at that point. I vaguely knew Mark Davis, but not really. And the following week we're all in a room going, right, well, how will this work then? So to Mark's point, that wasn't the club going, you guys can all go away. It was them going, oh, this could well work. And then Ed did loads of work on that. I think it's really important to acknowledge that as well. So the people on the board didn't go, oh, there's these angry idiots, let's ignore them. They went, how can we use these angry idiots? And how can we all do this together? And that's really where I think we've always had that kind of strength. And the first thing we did that felt like that was really doing Yellow and Blue, because it was the first thing that went from mad idea, we're a bunch of angry fans, to going, yeah, but actually from what we all do in our day jobs to some extent, albeit, you know, at a student level as I was doing at the time, this is what we can actually do when we put our minds to it.
One of the things, I want to go back to what Jonesy said earlier on. Jonesy said, you were saying that it was really important in that kind of politicisation of people as well. But, and it's really easy to just remember that season as just shouting, as just being really fucking angry. But one of my abiding memories, and again, I need to go back through Mark Lewis's well-organised collection of editions, but I do remember there being I remember there being a really, really solid bunch of content in there that actually was just about football, that was a good story, that actually added to the, you know, if you weren't that protesty and you came along and you bought a copy of Yellow and Blue, there'd be something really fucking good fun to read in there that actually wasn't sitting there raising the big right red fist and boom. I think that was an important
content. We had Steve Elson doing the kind of looking back at the historic. We had player interviews. So we were either getting them from our current players or old players. We had guest columnists. We had Rodney Marsh, Jim White, Jonathan Pearce doing regular columns, like kind of celeb columns. We had the reviews from the opposing websites. That was us going through. I think, Charlie, you were wherever. It was the fan. Their fans had written their content. You know, it was all that sort of stuff. We had pub reviews on which pub to go to for the away games, all that sort of stuff. It was everything you'd expect from a programme, then a whole load of extra humorous stuff. And we had columns from Merton Council, Wits had their own column, you know, Matt did his little cartoony thing. There was all of that going on that was just like cutting edge content. And it was that, producing that, was what we were basically going to say, right, if we were going to do a programme, this is what we want it to look like. And we want it to be like bloody good and funny. And I think that attitude was what goes all the way through AFC Women's history. It's like, if I'm going to do a club, I want it to be bloody good, and therefore I want this, and this. And if I'm Whistler and I want to do a protest and a campaign, I want it to be bloody good, and I'm going to do this, and this. That attitude was like totally, you know, totally unique to us. Obviously, for me, after Yellow and Blue, I went on and did all the football, the Nationwide Fair Game and Football Action Network Now. And during that, I remember one of the very early conversations I had when I was doing, like, organising protests nationally, was coming up a chairman in the championship set who said, football is a really easy game to run and make money from if it wasn't for the fans. And that, for me, was just like, that was archetypal of exactly what we came across. Yeah. And for me, that was always like, well, you can just F off. I'm not having that. And I think the whole Wimbledon ethos, totally from Whistler and all the stuff, because I only really got involved with the start of Yellow and Blue. But like Charlie, you know, Mark, Jonesy, you've been involved in a protest before that. So it was a bit in our DNA already from the Dublin protest, from even back Lawrence Lowne with his Sellers Park protest when there was talk about mergers with whoever it was back in the day, you know, all of that sort of stuff. So there was always a bit like Wimbledon, we're a bit like, no, we can do things a different way. And I think that's what's the fruition. And personally, when seeing what Mark's doing with comms now and that kind of narrative that goes through, and you can see it, that is that continuation. So I think, you know, it's awesome. I've got lots of fond memories of that time of Yellow and Blue, and like admittedly staying up and going to people's Hutney flat or whatever, it's a stupid time, or trying to put Jonesy in. Jonesy saying, do you want the sugar with your tea? And I said, you know, no. And he said, do you want a penguin? He said, no. I said, yes. And he said, oh, no, it's all sweet enough. And like, kind of like typical Jonesy humour, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, I really love it. Or even just delivering Quark files at some stupid time. The amount of times we had email conversations at 3 or 4 in the morning, which was bloody every night. You know, it was great.
It was a bit ahead of its time, because we're obviously showing our age, but way pre there being any kind of, you know, Dropbox online repository to work on files. We used to literally work on files by one of us doing it and then the other and emailing it on to the next one up the chain, which is woefully inefficient on any level. And I do remember, because I was in my final year at university, I do remember every so often I might possibly hypothetically have been in a student bar and be getting an SMS message saying, oi, where are the pages? And then having to you know, run back to my room and realise that in the last hour, a bunch of 8 pages had dropped on me, and I was supposed to then do them. You know, they'd come to me from. I think Alex and I would swap, so we'd do half of them each, and then we'd sub each other's, and then they'd go to Niall. So yeah, then poor old Niall would get them even later from me, because Alex hadn't got them to me till 10, and then they'd go from me to Niall at midnight, which means they'd go from Niall to Mark at 4 in the morning. And just emailing pages around is unbelievably inefficient.
I think you should take it. You know, when I said that,
I remember that, how bad you guys were at like getting to me late. Poor Jonesy was getting it.
Yeah, Jonesy's at the end of the yeah. chain, right? So I think the three of us should say now. Sorry about that, Mark. Sorry, Mark.
So I also think, you know, when I said about, you know, the guy going, "Can I have a word, mate?" The reason why he said, "Can I have a word?" I used to turn up with it on a CD. I used to burn it to CD and deliver it physically to the printer because it was such a huge file, yeah. obviously, right? And I'd go like, "There you go, mate." And it was that guy who kind of after 3 or 4 episodes went, "Have you got a minute?"
Yeah. It's CD. It is garbage.
This is like shit that you keep bringing in. Stop.
If it makes you feel any better, Jonesy, about 3 or 4 years later, kind of mid-2000s, I was up in Edinburgh, and a couple of kids I knew said, "Listen, we want to start a magazine." And I was like, "Sure, it's not that fucking hard." So I pushed these poor buggers. The thing's still running. It's unbelievable. But I remember yelling at them and going, "For the love of Christ, find a designer and don't treat them like shit." It was the one lesson I took out. Yeah, I was like, "Doesn't matter what you do, if your designer falls down and dies, you don't yeah. have a magazine."
It only took you 25 years to say sorry.
Fabulous. Gentlemen, I
like you all again now.
We can talk about this all day, and I'd love to, but some of us have actually got paid for jobs to do nowadays.
Mark, on that note, I need to get this out there, right? This is the important bit, right? So now I've mentioned, yeah, now here I am, you know, like record scratch. There's me, head of brand marketing, comms and membership at AFC Wimbledon. You might wonder how I got here. Then we have this episode, right? This is the bit I really wanted to say today. I am going into the club office now to run a very proficient, kind of like, you know, where we are is great, right? And we all know everything can always get better. It's a smaller team than this team that put this program out, right? There are 2 people running comms, 1 person running marketing, right? So it goes to show you that that effort and that kind of like dedication, you know, at varying levels, by the way, I'm not saying everybody's sitting here till midnight. It's still only me sitting here at midnight. But like, it carries on, do you know what I mean? And like, without it wanting to sort of like, go too deep on it, I really think it's important that these stories, you know, and that's why it's good that you've done this podcast, that these stories are out there, that people go like, "Shit, I didn't know that. I didn't realise that." And I do want the young fans around the football club, because that's the bit that worries me the most, right, is that those young fans kind of feel like it's their dad's football club, right? It isn't. Like, we didn't turn up at Wimbledon Football Club and kind of go, I didn't realise I'd joined the army. Here's a rifle, son. Right, it wasn't like that. We just went, "Fuck that, it's my football club. I'm going to do something about it." And so I really do encourage anyone who's disturbed enough and young enough and could be just doing something better, who stopped to listen to this, to know that that spirit belongs with them. Do you know what I mean? We didn't inherit it. At best, we inherited it from the likes of Andy Watson, who'd done like a fanzine in like, you know, 2 BC. You know, Wimbledon Football Club has always been an interesting football club that has brought the freaks together, who've been able to kind of form like punk bands and jazz trios and kind of like enjoy that football club. And I know that's kind of runs throughout all football clubs, but I do think this football club's different. I think it's always been different, even when there was arseholes in charge of it instead of fans. But I hope that our fans continue to kind of go, "Nah, this belongs to us." Whatever it ends up looking like after the vote and all that sort of stuff, it's your football club. Do you know what I mean? And if you let it disappear and ride off into the sunset and be not what you wanted it to be, that's on you. You know, you got to kind of like grab hold of it and go, "No, I'm not having that." And I do say that to young fans, and you can see some of a little glint in some of them's eye thinking, like, "I didn't realise that." And I'm like, "Over to you, mate." Because by the way, we ain't all going to be here. You know, some of us are going to go before others to make it, you know, not to make it too kind of like, right? Some of us are fucked off over the other side of the world, but like, we're all going to depart the planet at some point. And it's kind of like, you're going to inherit this football club, whether you want to or not. And if you decide, by the way, because it is democratically built, if you decide you don't give a shit, then you're just going to give it to some rich guy and it'll just be a little bit ordinary. But I do think you can kind of like get on with it. And that isn't just me trying to look for volunteers to help out in a very small team that do the current programme, right? But, like, as I say, I do think it's important that we're not boring old men telling everybody what we did. It sometimes gets mistaken for us trying to stake a claim in the club. It's not. What we're trying to do is say, look, none of us were kind of, at best, we were semi-professional, right? Or we had aspirations to end up in a space that we worked in. But we just got off our arse and did something about it, right?
That's a really good epitaph to end everything on. You've been listening to a Yellow and Blue 25th anniversary special of the Same Old Wombles podcast. My wonderful, grateful thanks to Charlie Tolbert from his treehouse in France, to Niall Cooper from his football-infested study at home, to Mark Jones from some chalet in the
Biarritz. Biarritz, funded by Richard Pope. Absolutely. It was Ash's idea. He told me to move here.
To Alex Kirk, apparently in the land down under, and to Adam Proctor, he is the resurrection, with every other football shirt he's possibly got. I've actually taken a couple of snips of some pictures from Yellow and Blue, including the article that was referenced there by Steve Elson, and the Grolsch advert, and an advert done by Merton Council about being in Merton, not being in Milton Keynes. And Adam will faithfully add them to this week's episode. So you've been listening to the Same Old Wombles. Thank you and good night.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth if we win or we